Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery.
Hi everyone, today I'm joined by Tawny Ammo, who is a psychic, tarot reader, healer and well-being coach from Norway. Tor's approach to spirituality is down to earth, sensible and straightforward, and I think this is why I was drawn to him. Since we met a few years ago, we have built a great connection through WhatsApp voice notes and chat on the regular about ethical practices and behaviour, or sometimes the lack thereof, in the world of spirituality. Tor's passion and commitment for practicing the mystic arts safely has led him to form the Esoteric Institute, where he helps guide other practitioners on how to approach spirituality in a safe, grounded, and regulated way. So today, we dive into a topic that maybe some people might find a little unsexy, but I think it's important that someone takes a stance on ethics and regulation in the spiritual space and has a conversation around it. Please, as always, use your discernment during this conversation today and take or leave what does or doesn't resonate. But maybe today we'll give you a new perspective on topics on regulation, ethics, and conduct in the spiritual world. So enjoy, here's the show. Hi Tor, how are you doing? And where are you dialing in from today?
Hi Amy, such a pleasure to be here. I am calling in from Broccoli, Southeast London. That is where I'm calling in from. And I have to say, Broccoli is like my favorite place I've lived in London. I don't know if you've ever visited it, but I just think it's such a pearl in terms of that it's so close to Central, but it's also really quiet.
I love that. And I love that it's called broccoli. It's like such an English word.
It's such an English word, isn't it? But it also has lots of like parks and lots of greeneries. But it's also incredibly well connected because I do a lot of work in Central and it takes me like, I don't know, 35 minutes to get in, which isn't
London
really
is
that
not
long.
Bad. Yeah, London which
is not really bad. Not bad, right? So, but it's also like really family friendly, which means there's lots of families who live here, which means it's really quiet and everybody turns like their sort of sound off fairly early.
Yeah.
I really love it here and it just has such good vibes, basically.
Beautiful. And you're from Norway originally, right?
I am from Norway originally, but I have lived here for now just over 10 years. So I was September 2012 is when I moved to England to study. Mm-hmm. And then I just decided to stay, which just does. I suppose first I started I started to stay for career, and my studies went on for way much longer than I had intended to. And then now I just like it here.
Nice, and it feels
about
like
the energy
home.
In the ground. It feels like it really does feel like home.
Yeah. London is a cool place. And well, thank you for joining, and I'm super looking forward to talking to you today about ethics and spiritual development and regulation and rules and all that stuff in the spiritual world. I know that's something that you're really passionate about, and it's also why you created the Esoteric Studies Institute to support people on their spiritual path. So we're going to dive into that topic quite deeply today. I'm really interested to see where that kind of conversation goes. But would you mind maybe before we sort of get into that nitty gritty, sharing a little bit more maybe about yourself and how you kind of started on your path of spirituality? I don't know how long that story is, but how did you kind of come into the world of spirituality?
Thank you for asking. And this is a topic I'm really, really interested in, obviously because I am in the psychic spiritual development space. I do feel a sense of responsibility for the people that I work with and to ensure that they behave in like an ethical way and that they have a sense of responsibility and integrity around their practice when they work with people who are, you know, potentially really vulnerable. And, you know, that's often what you find is that when people do come to you for a healing session or a reading, probably actually, is that, as no, actually, it's probably both. It's like people come to you because they're incredibly vulnerable and they're seeking help, which they may or may not have found somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then to hold that space for someone who is vulnerable is a tremendous responsibility. And it's not something anyone should take lightly, right? So it's a really important thing to do. Anyway, we will delve into the depths of that. So my spiritual journey, gosh. So my grandmother was a clairvoyant medium.
Ah, okay.
So every time I visited her during summer, and I spent quite a lot of time there, she taught me everything she knew about meditation, about spirit guides, about crystals, the tarot. You know, the tarot deck that I have was my grandmother's, and I inherited that from her. So there's like huge sort of nostalgic value from that, which is quite incredible. Wow. And I suppose I was quite lucky in the sense that I had a fairly grounded introduction to spirituality. I mean, my grandmother sometimes could be quite far out, and there's not everything she taught me, which I now resonate with as an adult. And I think that's also part of like the, I suppose, spiritual maturity process, and also be introduced to other kind of teachers and like through your own experience and like reflecting and so on and so forth. But I was very lucky to have my grandmother, because it then is something which that sense, that essence have been with me for my my entire life. You know, I think that I was probably, I want to say 5 or 6 years old the first time my grandmother guided me through a meditation where I was introduced to my first spirit guide, right? That's the first time. And she did that in a very gentle, caring, nurturing way. And I was sort of introduced to that in a way which was very, very safe.
This is a really beautiful thing, because I think I'm sort of quite jealous, I think, of a lot of people in the spiritual world where they have this really beautiful, you know, connection to spirituality from a young age. And mine has come much later through sort of necessity and, like, I believe sort of like my divine purpose sort of pushing me there, because I was really in a different direction. But I guess, like, is that something then you kind of kept with you or your whole life, or did you kind of fall out of that loop and come back to it a little bit later, or do you really feel like, yeah, it's just always been there?
Yeah. No, during adolescence, drinking and chasing boys were probably like, that was much higher on the priority list than getting down to meditate and like cultivate my heaven within. Mm-hmm. So I think I fell away a bit from the age of, I want to say I probably fell away from the age of like 13, 14 to about the age of 21. Like, it was always there, sort of lingering in the back of my mind. But then I did move to London when I was 21. And then not too long afterwards, actually, there's a story here too. I should probably say that. So I can't remember exactly which Christmas this was, but I partied quite a bit when I came to London first. And so, like, I think it was the Christmas after or the one after, and then I went to actually see my grandmother, and I hadn't seen her for a while, and I sort of walked in, and I often slept there for a night when I stayed over there when I visited. And she, like, as grandmothers do, right, they have a knowing that I was definitely slightly off path, probably more than slightly. And she was like, she leaned in, she was like, "What the F are you doing with your life?" As a knowing, clairvoyant grandmother does. Yeah. And she was like, "You need to stop whatever you're doing with your life, and you need to find a circle, and you need to find a teacher or someone to work with in London." And as sort of like a loyal dog of a grandson, obviously lots of care and love towards my grandmother, I was like, "Oh, okay." I was living with someone at the time who knew someone who ran a very small, private, independent psychic circle here in London. And that's where I met Inez. Inez is currently, she's my current spiritual teacher. And I've worked with her now for like 9 years. Right?
So your grandma was right then. So you really did sort of need to find this.
I did,
teacher. Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. So it was like 2 months after I met Inez, basically.
Yeah, wow.
And that was just an incredible gift. And Inez used to run a circle in South Bank for a while. I was there like once a week, And then for a period, I was actually there twice a week for quite a few years. And now the circle with COVID and everything, it's all calmed down. And I connect with her still every week and she still runs the circle, but it's not as sort of rigorous as it used to be. But yeah, again, I feel so lucky to have met someone like Inez, who's just, she's just invested an immense amount of time into my development, right? And her story is that her husband, Owen, I suppose he wasn't like her partner, Owen, he was an incredible clairvoyant medium, and they worked together for, over 30 years, right? And so they did seminars and workshops and ran circles in the spiritual space. And her approach to spirituality is just so incredibly grounded and sensible. And, you know, as I'm like an active practitioner and have students and do readings, I suppose she's now my supervisor in many ways. And this is, you know, this is slightly where our conversation about ethics and morals begin, right?
Yes.
Because I do in many ways have a supervisor, and I don't know, like arguably most psychics or healers out there, they probably don't have a supervisor, right? And I just glean an incredible amount of benefit from having someone to talk to about each and every session that I have. And she takes that time to work with me. Yeah.
I think that's amazing. I think this is such a great segue. And I was just like listening to you. I was like, oh, this is just so beautiful, because it does kind of take us down that route of what we're going to speak about today. And I think the importance of ethics and regulation and kind of, learning and just taking the time to get to a place, where you can actually hold space for clients. And we were just talking before we click record, and I think it's something that we don't obviously always want to speak about in sort of a broader sense, and like we are doing today on this podcast, because I think, you know, there is a possibility that we might say something today that people don't agree with everything we say. And it's not the most sexiest of subjects to talk about, ethics and regulation. But the fact, I think me and you have, you know, clicked and connected because I feel quite strongly in the fact of, you know, I will always be very open in the fact that I've been sort of facilitating for like 2 to 3 years now. So not like a really long time, but I was quite shocked, I think, when I sort of stepped more into the world of spirituality. I've always sort of had a bit of a connection through the yoga space, but, you know, sort of going into like a bit of a deeper practice, that there isn't much regulation. And I think I was also quite lucky to have people who are much older who have helped to guide me as well. But I think, you know, looking back on when I started this journey, or like, you know, really dived a lot deeper into it, like starting the podcast, I'm so glad that I wasn't a space holder at that time, or as much as I am now, because I was definitely not ready. And I think there are sort of moral codes of conduct that you do learn, and you do have to kind of know, because you do hold such responsibility as a space holder and a facilitator. So what are your thoughts around regulation, and like why do you think that it's important? I mean, it's a big question, but I'm leaving.
I was thinking about where to begin, and I mean, I suppose just talk a bit about my personal experience and where kind of this thinking in many ways comes from. So I used to be the president of the student union at the at the university that I used to work at, and we always had to fill in this bloody health and safety thing that we had to do before every event, like literally every event, and had to be sent off to this health and safety officer, and then they had to send it back, and they did it wrong, and it was like, oh god, you know, it was so much work.
Yeah.
But, and at the time I was like 23, 24, and I was like, oh, why do I have like, to
why
do
am
all
I
these
doing
things?
This yeah.
Why am I doing this, you know, why am I doing this? And then I was also a university teacher for a few years, and again lots of like health and safety, and even still then I was like, oh, this is so boring. But then again, it's like as you mature and you have experiences with people, and you're just like, ah, so this is why all of these checks and balances have to be in place. Mm-hmm. Because what if someone really harms themselves? You know, what if someone drinks too much at a party? What do you do then? Do you have any sort of plans in place, right? If you like, as the president of the student union, like if I held a party and someone got really pissed,
Yeah.
Like, what's the, what do you do in that
what's
moment?
The protocol? Yeah.
Like, what's the protocol? And you had to fill all these things in and you had to have a plan
mm-hmm.
at the time. You're like, oh, this is really boring. Nobody's going to get that pissed. But then it does happen. And you have to help people, I don't know, call an ambulance, whatever. Like, there's things you have to do, right? And then I worked in a corporate part-time for a few years where I got some amazing mental health first aider training. Where you get some, it's probably the most hardcore, I mean, it's really short, but still most hardcore training around people who struggle with schizophrenia, with all kinds of sort of mental illness, right? And people, you talk a lot about people who consider ending their life, for example, like suicide. So it's sort of, you become suicide prevention. And these are obviously incredibly serious topics. But, you know, they're also really, really important. So I think I've been quite lucky because of my part-time corporate experience into this health and safety, the mental health first aider. I also done coaching training, right? So it's not all rooted in sort of the etheric spiritual world.
Right.
Obviously, I did serious training
needs
in sort of the etheric spiritual,
well.
But it's also incredibly sort of day-to-day grounded mental health first aider, which is some out there might be like, why do we need that? Because people who come to you are incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah, I've also had some experiences that have happened to me facilitating, and that, you know, that there have been people that come up after and yeah, they've really opened up because of the session, and then they kind of want extra guidance. And I think it's a really interesting piece to discuss, because I don't have sort of experience as a mental first aider, for example. So you know, my response to someone who's come to me after class with questions around mental health is, I'm really sorry, but I am not experienced to help with this. And here are some people that I would recommend. And I always, you know, try to have a handful of people that I would recommend to help and to kind of take that further. But I guess, you know, and I think it's great that you do have that, but not every, you know, not every practitioner does. But I guess do you think there's more that we could be doing to help hold safe spaces? Like, do you have sort of tips and tricks that you do in order to kind of, and it, you know, I think a safe space is a sort of buzzword at the moment. Like, what is a safe space? You know, a safe space can only be safe space for someone that really, that can be different to everyone. But you know what I mean? Like, how do you kind of, what do you do when you sort of set up at your sessions? I would love to know, just to kind of create that feeling of safety, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I want to say that that's probably, that is a brilliant response.
Thanks.
What you had to that person. You
know,
that is the appropriate response, right? Because I think a really important part of any spiritual practitioner's practice is to know your limitations.
Right. Yes.
You know your limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. That's a really important part. And there was another thing. So I used to work. So I used to be I used to run the learning and development function at a tech ed, where we worked with lots of mentors who worked with lots of individuals, and we had to do lots of safeguarding. And, you know, one of the things we said was, if there's at any point during that conversation where there's a thought in your mind where you're like, I think this might be a safeguarding issue, check. Like, always check, because there's something in your intuition, there's something you've learned or heard where you think, there's something here which I need to double check with the supervisor, basically, check with someone who's more experienced. If that feeling, during a session, if the feeling comes up where you're like, I think this is outside of my boundaries, then I should check with someone.
When you're looking for a practitioner, yourself, or if you've got tips for someone who's kind of new to the spiritual space and sort of navigating how to find someone, I guess is there any sort of real big no-gos for you, or what do you look out for when you're making a booking, or and have you seen that sort of show up in a space that's being held?
You know, I have to admit my limitation here is that I don't really book with anyone aside from like, because I've got my spiritual teacher, you know, because I've got her, I suppose I'm very lucky and I'm also really spoiled. I'm super spoiled, but it is interesting. But I have been thinking about this lately just to see if I can get like a slightly different perspective. And it is something I think about. And I think I have found someone who I can like relate to, and I can feel that we're coming from a similar place. And I think actually that's one thing which is quite important to me when it comes to like collaborations and people I work with and people I sort of associate myself with, is because the spiritual space is so broad and wide, and people can believe all kinds of things because there's no proof in a sense, aside from the confirmation during a reading. There's like, so I think what I look for is someone who I can sort of get a sense of resonance with, that we're coming from a very grounded place. Now you asked me about, so how do I set up a safe, grounded space for people to have a spiritual experience with? And I think first and foremost, it starts with myself, right? It starts with the presence that I bring to a room. I read this quote not too long ago by this guy called John Wineland, because I've been starting to do a bit of space. I'm stepping into that men's space and sort of men's well-being and figuring out what I can do in that world. And, you know, there's a lot of talking around defining masculinity. Mm. Like, what is masculinity? And I'm going to paraphrase now and I'm going to butcher it slightly, but, you know, the essence of that, and you could just change out the word masculinity with femininity and you would have the same thing. But, you know, it's something about like masculinity is a deep rooted connection to your own consciousness and that of the divine.
Mm.
And that's it. There's no aggression. There's no protector. There's no competitiveness. All of that is sort of taken out of it. And it really just comes down to having a really grounded connection with yourself, which then takes you to the divine. Love and that. I was just like, that's beautiful. You could just change that out. A real connection with your feminine is a deep connection with the self and the divine.
Yeah.
There's nothing more, nothing less. That is just that.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that so much. And I think
I read it and I was just like, that is beautiful, you know? And I, you know, not to blow my own trumpet, but I do think that why some people resonate with me is because I do think I have like a fairly good, obviously there's lots of things to still explore, but I still feel like I have a fairly good rooted, grounded connection to myself and my own practice.
Yeah.
Right. That's that. And I think people can sense that, I suppose. Yeah. I have a sense of what I do and who I am and where, like the kind of vision that I have.
Mm.
And I think people connect with that. And I think they feel safe around that energy.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it always starts with the self. Right. And that sense of confidence and sense of trust that I have in myself that I can actually do this thing.
Yes. I think that is such a good point of just, you know, if you're holding space, can you actually, you know, have that confidence and the authenticity to do what you say you do? And I think we absolutely hold that responsibility as practitioners for, you know, hopefully for people to come into a space and feel like they can really open up. And like that is, you know, that's such powerful work when ultimately, you know, they're moving through their own healing journey and they are able to feel comfortable to open up to that. It's so beautiful. And I think I totally agree. I think it's a shame when, you know, you do hear some stories where people have gone to sessions and they've felt uncomfortable. And there's been like, you know, I mean, that there's always going to be moments, I suppose, in your journey where you do get things wrong. And I think it's not, you know, and I know that we're not trying to be naysayers, because I'm sure you've had experiences yourself where you think, oh, you know, I could have done that differently. But I think to go back to what you were also saying earlier of sort of, you know, if you're going to hold space for a session, can you truly, you know, do you truly feel confident that you can do that to the best of your ability, right? And I think that, you know, with this resurgence of spirituality, there has been sort of, just like TikTok clickbait stuff that's just like, Oh, I don't know.
The TikTok drives me. The TikTok drives me crazy. Because it's like, I don't really want to tell anyone what they can't and cannot do. But you know, I really love listening to this podcast, which is a sort of, it's a very sobering thing for me to do. Because I love listening to this podcast, which is called Conspirituality.
Oh, okay.
And they go after the spiritual space like nobody's business, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, they're like super critical, super like, and the great thing is they used to be really hard into like the yoga space in LA.
Okay.
And then they were also like cult survivors and,
oh, wow.
And so it's like, so they have like what I really love about them is that they have like a real experience. I mean, they would hate me, right? They would think some of the things I do is like absolute Looney Tunes.
And why? Why is that?
Because they like, because obviously I step into like energy healing and sort of past life regression and uh-huh. I step into that space and they're just like, we don't believe in any of that.
Oh, they used to do that.
To an extent, yeah. But what I really like listening to that podcast for mm-hmm. is because there is quite a lot of stuff. And then there's where I'm going with this with TikTok, because they did an episode on TikTok, basically, mm-hmm. and sort of TikTok spirituality. And there was a practitioner on there who's like, listening to this song is going to cure your IBS.
Oh, my God.
Right? But like listening to this sort of humming and sort of stuff is going to sort of cure your IBS. And I'm just like, from someone who struggles with IBS, that is just not true. There's no humming in the world who's going to take my IBS in the world. I've meditated enough to know that that is not what's going to take my chronic illness. So, I mean, I am very... When I talk about the benefits of my work, I am incredibly like humble, right? I do not oversell what I can do. And that's where very often that's where the ethics and morals comes in with spiritual, because you'll see some spiritual practitioners who says the healing will be immediate. Have one session with me and the healing is done. I will purge your childhood trauma.
Even big spiritual teachers, I'm not going to say the person who has said this because I don't want to get sued, but a certain person who teaches like very hardcore breathing techniques has said things like that, like they're God. Yeah. And you know, you see that through some of the Netflix documentaries that there's people who have, you know, kind of created this cult following because they proclaim to do things to people that are just so wrong. And actually, one of the first things I was told when I did my initial 200-hour yoga teacher training was that, and I love that they actually shared this with me, that my teacher's experience was that you will have people, students that come up to you after, who probably get a little bit obsessive because they, you know, if they like your classes, because they feel like you could be fixing them. Mm. And I'm really happy that they said that, because I think that can be a dangerous thing when you work in the world of spirituality, where people do start to see change and they do start to kind of quote unquote potentially start to heal themselves in some way. And then they come, you know, they rely on you. And I think that that people I've seen that so much, like practitioners play into that, you know, that just, I'm healing you, I suppose. And that's so dangerous. I'm really happy that you
it is incredibly dangerous. And that's where sort of the sort of ethics and morals and frameworks begin to come into place, right? Are we honest about what we can do?
Right.
Right? Are we really honest about what we can do? Like, there's so many people who say that, you know, they can cure cancer with hands-on healing, right? Mm. You cannot cure cancer with hands-on healing, you know? Well, is it the funny thing though is like, you do hear people who change their lifestyle and their cancer regresses, right? So it is like a really fine balance to strike because there are definitely like, it is a complicated area.
It is.
I would never market that what I can do can heal broken bones or cure cancer, because that is unethical.
No, absolutely. I think it's so true. And I think the danger is, it, you know, with working in the space is that, or even coming to someone in the world of spirituality where they've, you know, yeah, they said they're a Reiki healer or whatever, you know, the term is, and people come to feel like, yeah, they can be fixed or cured or change something. And that you're going to be the person that does that. But actually, you know, ultimately, it's so cheesy, but true. Like, we are just facilitating people's own healing journey and just kind of activating what they already hold within them. So, I mean, that's what I believe. I don't know if that resonates with you, but.
Yeah. No, it definitely resonates. And, you know, I'm going to take us on a slightly digression here. One thing which I've had to, it sort of goes with what you were saying about people thinking that you can heal them. One sort of internal struggle or battle that I've had to work myself through, and I suppose I've had to like portion it into two different boxes, is that I've had some serious like coaching training, right? And in coaching training, you're not supposed to give anyone the answer, right? You're supposed to ask questions, hold that space for discovery, and they find the answers for themselves and whatever. Whilst in a psychic tarot reading, right, you're going to give them the answer, or like that's sort of a part of the, I suppose, the part of the premise or the part of whatever is that you give them the answer. And that's something I've had to really sort of couch within my brain. It's like, how am I going to do this? Like, how does that work? Because I do really believe in the coaching process of helping someone become more independent and take care of themselves and find answers for themselves. And then how do I do that in a tarot reading or a psychic reading?
Yeah.
I'm sort of giving them the answer. It's not.
No, I get what you mean though.
People, it's a real challenge.
Want you to give them the answers. And I think, of course, you can guide them, but the answer, they have to ultimately be in charge of their own life. And I had this conversation the other day when I was giving a reading, and this, you know, this person was really prompting me to kind of tell them what to do. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, but you're going to, you know, that's a decision that you're going to have to make for yourself. And they're like, no, I know. Okay, so I'd love to ask you, thanks for sharing all that you've shared also so openly. And I think this is going to be so helpful for people. Like, do you think that there should be more regulation in this, in the spiritual world? And if yes, why and how can that happen? It's a big question.
It is a big question. And I was thinking about this, and, you know, I've done some research on, because there are some bodies out there, if you like, if you Google tarot ethics, right, there are some bodies out there who have some, like, I think Biddy Tarot, they have one. So there's some people who's like, touched on it gently already. I suppose where the lack is that there's no like quote-unquote enforcement, right? So I think yes, there should be some training around, like, I mean, it's interesting because we were having this conversation about like, would it take away the magic or the mystery or the sort of spiritual artistry or flow from the session if you had if you had like a framework around it? And I think the way to like get around that is to give people like some training or what it means to be ethical, right? What does it because you can go to university and do a degree in ethics, right?
Very true.
So I actually think that instead of like deciding what people can and can't do, obviously, I think there will be, like I said this thing in a voicemail to you where I was talking about like writing some sort of the ethical practitioner's manifesto, right? And what, and lay out some ground rules or some principles around
principles is nice, actually.
Some principles around what that means. But I suppose what one could do is to give people, first of all, like some like training on what it means to behave ethically in a, like in a reading and in a healing session, and then perhaps some training on like what it means to be sort of rooted in your own sense of self, like help people hold that space to become more grounded and rooted in yourself and have that confidence, right, in your in your abilities. And then I think one thing which I have access to, you know, is to have that ongoing supervision. Because if you're a therapist or a psychologist, you have a supervisor.
Yeah.
And you see them every week.
Yeah.
Every week you see them. Right. And we should have, in some sense, we should have that. where we have a supervisor who you can go to and just be like, hey, I just went through this. Like,
Is that okay? Absolutely.
Is that okay? Like, what happened? Like, what happened? I've had some readings where I've come out of it and I'm just like, I don't want to swear. But
you can swear. It's okay.
I was like, fuck, I need to call Inez now.
Yes.
Because what was that? Like, what just happened? I'm sure I do things which people could point out to me afterwards and say, hey, Tor, that was a bit unethical. And if anyone does that, I mean, like, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, again, part of that ethical journey of being an ethical practitioner is to welcome that feedback and just be like, oh, shit, yeah, you're right. I did that. Mm-hmm. That is something I'm definitely going to change moving forward.
Yeah.
So I think that's also obviously a part of the manifesto, the principle. It's like openness to feedback, basically, around one's own practice.
Yeah, I love that so much. And yeah, that's beautiful. And I think we should all do that. I also am such a perfectionist a lot of the time. And sometimes it can be really hard to receive feedback if you haven't, you know, kind of consented to it. But I do, again, I think most of the time I have received feedback, it's like, it's always been for a reason. And I think it does help you along your journey, whether you're in that right place to receive it. And from wherever it comes from, I think it's always from a place of like how you can support that person better. And I think it's great to receive feedback, and yeah, we should be giving it more in a sort of construct. I also try to do that with my peers as well, and just say like, hey, like, how about this? Or I love this. And like, what about this? And I think there's really nice ways that you can speak to that in a supportive, constructive way. So yeah, I also, for the record, I'm always open to feedback where it's nicely said, and being British, it's nice to have a soft tone, but I also really appreciate feedback as well. Thank you so much, Tor, for being on here today. And just like before you go, how can people find and connect with you? I know you're in a sort of different spaces in London and online, and
sure. So you can find me online at Tor Nyamo, and also at Esoteric Studies Institute. So that's also tornyamo.com and esotericstudiesinstitute.com. I do some work at Montcalm East in person in London. I do work at, I'm going to start working at a space in Hackney as well, which is called Glass House. I'm going to start working there in February, which is going to be really exciting. You can also, from tomorrow, actually, start seeing me once a week at Remind Studio. So that's really cool. You can also find me the other house in London, where I'll be running some psychic circles in person. So that's nice. A space for non-practitioners and practitioners to come together and practice and create that practice of practicing together.
Love. You know?
So that's really cool. At the other house, you can find me occasionally at the Mandrake Hotel as well. So I do some work there. So I was thinking about this earlier, actually. I was like, you can actually find me at like quite some cool places in London, which is really awesome. And I feel so lucky to have like been able to like lure myself into those places.
Definitely
so that's nice.
Not luring. You're meant to be there.
I am possibly meant to be there. Trying to be humble here, you know. I mean, I'm a Leo, like my sun sign is a Leo.
Oh, so are you?
Have to work on my humility, basically, because obviously tons of ego in there, especially when I was younger. So yeah, those are some of the spaces. Is there anywhere I've forgotten? No, I do lots of work with like various corporate clients, but obviously that's not where you can sort of find me. So yeah, tons of different places. I do one-to-one psychic tarot readings. I do one-to-one spiritual healing, and then group tarot reading and group spiritual healing sessions. And I do offer one-to-one spiritual mentoring, right? For people who are practitioners and want to have someone as a supervisor, I do offer that. With Esoteric Studies Institute, we will soon be offering an accredited course on healing.
Nice.
So we will be offering that. And obviously an important part of that will be to have a lecture, a module on like ethical behavior or like ethical practicing. I think there's a great idea, something around like creating the ethical spiritual practitioner manifesto, something like that. I have lots of ideas around Esoteric Studies Institute. There's also a great YouTube channel where I talk about lots of different like esoteric topics. So if you're interested in learning, there's lots of free content on our YouTube channel.
Nice. Thank you so much. And please do share. And once, you know, once some of those courses come out, and we always share, you know, everyone who's been on the podcast, I try to share as much of the content as possible to help people. Mm. So yeah, just stay connected through the community. And yeah, thank you so much for talking to me today about this wonderful, sexy topic of ethics and regulation.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy. And yeah, I find it really interesting talking about this because it is a part of our development as practitioners, you know? So it's really cool and really interesting to think about because there's lots of development to do there.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.